Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight we've got Ian and Zach, and we're going to talk about Sam Raimi's return to horror, which is kind of weird. People talk about like, oh, it's his big return to horror, but it's like he did those Evil Dead movies, and the third one wasn't even really a horror movie, and then what he didn't really do a horror movie, but so I don't know. The woman at the end was clapping and like, classic Raimi, and I'm like, are you a poser or what? Because he made two movies? Eh. Anyway, movie was called Drag Me to Hell. Starred Warren from Ed, otherwise known as Apple Kid.
Mac Kid.
Allison Lohman, who was in Matchstick Men. Screenplay was co-written by Raimi, and it was, I don't know, his brother or something. It was another Raimi.
Ivan
Raimi.
You really can't say that name very well.
I can't. No,
Raimi.
Let me see. What's up, man? No Ted Raimi.
He was busy.
He's busy working on the Sequest movie or something. Yeah, probably. So, Drag Me to Hell is a PG-13 kind of a horror suspense film, I guess. I don't really know what to call it. The thing I've always wondered is Raimi. He wears a suit because he's a Hitchcock guy. He loves Hitchcock, so in, like homage to Alfred Hitchcock, he always wears a suit on all the sets. And in this, you can see little bits of Hitchcock stuff with like some of the camera movement, some of the way he like sets up stuff. He's of course got the platinum blonde. Mm-hmm. Allison Lohman is.
Well, he wanted a
going with that.
He wanted a brunette because Ellen Page was cast.
And well, do you know were they going to dye her hair though? You don't know.
Probably not.
I went into this not expecting a lot, not expecting much, thinking it looked like a sci-fi channel movie. It looked like your generic, basic screams and thrills and whatever crazy horror movie stuff. And it's not really my genre. But I could appreciate that someone who's done such big blockbusters, like Sam, was going to come back to doing something a little smaller and a little simpler. And I thought, well, this could be interesting. And I know he's got a sense of humor about some of that stuff. I thought it could be
he's
something different.
He's got a sense of humor about all of his stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing he takes seriously.
Yeah.
Even in the Spider-Man stuff, they try to keep some gravitas in the scenes where, like, people were dying and stuff. But most of the time, like, when people were making serious decisions, there was jaunty angles zooming in on their faces at all times because he doesn't want to give up the tricks.
That's true. He does get a little hammy with the tricks. But here was a perfect vehicle for him to do that. Now, in all fair criticism, I think a lot of that stuff, I don't care about the camera movements, but they did go for the gross out stuff, and it was just a little too much for me. It wasn't that it was off-putting, it was just that it was like it was trying too hard. It really took me out of the movie to see like CG eyeballs popping out, and I was like bored with it. I didn't care.
I thought a lot of that stuff in the second act was filler because I thought it was probably about 15 minutes too long. But I utterly enjoyed it. I found it, everyone was saying it was not just a return to him doing horror, but it was very much in the style of the Evil Dead movies, and it really was, because Eli Roth has done it, but Eli Roth's horror that has comedy in it is generally something where the horror still is the overriding factor, and the comedic moments kind of bring you out of it, which are, moments of levity that kind of relax you so that you can get scared again or whatever. But Eli Roth stuff isn't like jolting horror. It's like horrifying, I can't believe they're doing this stuff type horror.
And or shocking.
The limitations of PG-13 with less violence is that you have to do it like jolts. Mm-hmm. You have to jolt. The way that Raimi mixes horror and comedy is fantastic.
I enjoy it.
All the way through, it's a very fun, entertaining movie to watch all the way through, despite the slow parts in the second act. And the way that the humor is generally used is in like dialogue and like certain characters. Not that they're necessarily comedic relief, but.
They provide that sort of deadpan, just kind of walk in.
Yeah.
The guy.
I love that the guru guy.
Yeah.
She would say something terribly like solemn, and he would go yes, just like answer with one word, like with a really like that guy was so deadpan. It was her boss, and I've always loved that guy.
Yeah.
In the bank, and he was just so like dead-eyed the whole movie. Like he was just trying to exude someone who's completely 100% businesslike. In the moments where it's building up in the first act to like, oh no, something terrible is going to happen, there's nothing funny about him at all. But then later, you know, there's the part where she has a horrific nosebleed that sprays LaRune, and the first thing he says is, did it get in my mouth? And he keeps asking his coworkers that. I really enjoyed it. I think the idea, he is behind some of the worst horror films made these days because of his ghost house thing. And they put out stuff that he's like, well, here's a cool idea for a thing that'll make us some money. And then let's see, you direct it. And then it's somebody who's like a music video director or someone coming up who directed an episode of Seventh Heaven or something like that. But when he himself takes hold of it, it becomes an actual, you know, it's a movie with cinematic qualities, because it's not just that he uses tricks because he wants to use tricks with like the filming and angles and zooming and stuff like that. He does it because it's effective.
Well, he knows what he's doing. Yeah. It's the Hitchcock stuff.
It's more than Hitchcock though, because you know, De Palma does Hitchcock stuff in the way that Hitchcock never, there were never fast cuts or anything like that. This guy uses editing. Raimi uses editing to his advantage by far. You and I both laugh in this part, the one part where she was hearing noises in her house, and it does these quick, like, 2 inches closer cuts,
jump cuts
to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're like, it wasn't enough that it was necessary, you know? Yeah. But it was totally successful. You're like, wow, this is really actually effective the way he does this. I just love when he, you know, I think this was a chance for him to do something fun again for him, because I think when you go way over, when you direct some $200 million thing, eventually I think maybe the pressures of knowing that much money is riding on your decisions probably makes it so you kind of have to be
play it safe.
You got to play it safe. And this way, he's like, you know what, I'm going to do whatever I want with the filming, and it's going to be just like the horror movies I used to make. And it really was, save for the lack of a main character that Bruce Campbell would have played is something. But that wasn't all the comedy in the Evil Dead films. You know, a lot of the comedy was the fact that, which he did in this, is the crazy laughing noises and things coming to life and moving around. And he doesn't do that so much as like things moving through the walls. And yeah. it's just awesome to see that stuff for some reason, because it looks like it should be really stupid, but it's not. It really isn't. Yeah.
And it's
simultaneously funny and scary, and it's just a great credit to him that he's able to pull that off.
Well, it's like within that world, you either get to buy it or not buy it. I mean, you decided to sit down and watch a monster movie, so there you go. Here we go. It's going to be rattles and chains and whistles, but it's got a sense of humor about itself, and it's kind of fun. I mean, and to be perfectly honest, it plays like an episode of Twilight Zone or something, where the main character, Alison Lohman, is, you know, she's not like an all evil person.
She makes her own bed. She made her bed.
She sort of does, but at the same time, she didn't really ever do anything wrong.
All she did was obey the mores of our society, where you do your job.
Yeah.
And because she does her job, all hell breaks.
And because the old lady didn't want to live with her granddaughter.
And shame her. Yeah,
and shame her.
It hit all the right notes. I just felt like a few too many of the scenes in the second act where she's at her house and something wacky happens to her, they could have excised one or two of those, and it would have shaved a few minutes off the thing. It would have run a little smoother, just because.
Well, the whole thing where she goes through and gets all her stuff to sell off to pay the and then it kind of didn't end up mattering.
It's a drag
because Warren showed up and he's like, "Look, I sold some of my
Warren.
I sold some of my Apple stock."
You know, I got
to
say,
John Hodgman.
Aside from the Macintosh stuff, I really like Justin.
No, he's likable, but
people like to diss on him because he plays the pompous prick. But any single sort of side character he ever plays is really fantastic.
He was all right in this. I just feel like they should have made an effort to age him up or something, because he's playing this psychology professor and he still looks like a 17-year-old kid.
He looks like he's in his early 30s to me.
Really?
Yeah.
He's clean cut or something. They should have done something.
Yeah.
Like, they made
joke
about
that.
The beard.
Said
yeah.
I thought you'd have a great beard by now. He's like, yeah, I've been trying, you know. But
they should have just had him have a beard. I think it would have worked. It would have been because it's.
They should have just gotten the bad guy from Sleeping with the Enemy.
They should have. That would have been great.
I think that guy's like 57.
He's like, did we quarrel again?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I about Justin Long. I actually think that we haven't really gone into the plot much here, but. Just his lines at the very end of the film, the way he speaks is always used to great effect in movies. Like, people have figured out that his delivery can be very effective.
I had a problem
when he plays a straight main character, like in Waiting. That's not so big a deal. But when he's in something like, I mean, he was fantastic in his 1 minute scene in Idiocracy, and he just
Zach and Mary.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, the guy's actually got some good comedic timing and a good control of his diction, I think, to do that. But I don't know. I liked the last few lines of the movie. He said the way he was talking was like just totally like mumbling, like, "Oh, I got this thing here. I think you got my quarter." Like so nonchalant as this horrifying thing is building up. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that there was a couple times where it was like he was supposed to be the science guy, and the other guy was, and that you thought they were going to go down that route, but then you know. She pretty quickly just said, "Shut up, look."
Yeah, right.
You know, and so that part was a little like, "What are you doing with the movie? Where's it going? Is it really going to turn into this like science versus religion?"
You got to have someone who doesn't believe her.
You do have to, yeah. But then it kind of is such a throwaway thing because he pretty much just goes along with her the whole time, mm-hmm. and they try to make this like. They try to make her character more in depth, and they kind of never really hit on.
They never hit on all that stuff.
And his relationship with her, and the fact that like she feels very. I mean, from the get go, she's taking diction lessons to learn how to be less Southern.
Well, she's trying to basically
pretend to be someone she's not.
She's someone who's trying to pretend to be someone she's not to get rid of her past, whatever. And that probably plays something into her character and why she does what she does. And there's probably some deep moral about, you know. If you had just been yourself, then none of this would have happened. I don't think it's wholly effective either, but I think that's definitely what they attempted to do. Just because you set all that up with her character, she's trying to speak in a non-farmish manner, and she doesn't want to talk about her mother, and etc. And then the fact that she, in her heart of hearts, wants to help this woman, and then decides for the good of her job and promotion and to make people think she's...
tougher.
Not just tougher, but
more aggressive.
It's important to her. You can see it's very important to her, the status thing for his parents. You know, that bothers her when he hears the very conveniently loud speakerphone conversation, mm-hmm. you know, where that happens the second she walks away. I think all that stuff was done purposely. That any dialogue that seemed forced was done in a very kind of playful manner, because I think he was like, you know what, you gotta do all this stuff, so here you go.
Yeah, exactly. And they set her up to be, I would say, pretty sympathetic.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I didn't feel like she...
Well, because she wanted to do the right thing, and she was forced not to.
Well, she wanted to do the right thing, and she pretty much still did. You know, this woman had gotten 2 extensions already. I mean, yeah, you can magically constantly give everybody extensions and happy...
Here we go.
Happy,
here comes Evil Ian.
Happy,
Evil
Ian. Happy nowhere land, but
you know,
at the same
all she
time,
wanted to do was go see her dying grandparents in Cincinnati. And so, yeah.
Wait, what's that from?
I don't know.
Nothing? I guess, you know, it's one of those movies that's just going to kind of hit you... With its thing. I mean, and her character doesn't kind of changes a little. She gets a little less passive, I guess. Sort
well,
of
no, thing. Yeah. She starts to get desperate, and when she gets desperate, it's funny because there's the thing with the tiny cute kitten.
Uh-huh.
And
then when she goes to the graveyard,
she goes
at the end and everything.
Positively crazy, trying to. Yeah, I like the thing earlier where the guy had mentioned when he wanted to know what she had done. He said, "Did you by any chance?" Offend the dead or upset a gravesite, which she ends up doing later
exactly.
to try to take this other curse off her. So either way, she was basically like,
I guess.
I don't know. And the way it was, just great cinematography and, you know, it was like, if he had the money, like, you know, obviously this is considered lower budget than things he's been doing recently, but it's still much, much, much higher budget than any of the Evil Dead films. And you just think of like what the production values would have been on something like that if he had... You know, this might have cost like $30 million to make or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
20, 30, somewhere around there. So, you know, if he had that much to make on any of those, then, you know, he probably would have the same look. A lot of them have a really kind of...
I think it didn't really need it. I mean, and the visual effects to me were still looked pretty
bad. The visual effects, were kind of forced at times and things like that. But I think overall, aside from a few of the eyeball popping out things, it was... I think considering that it was meant to be one of those things that was both comedic and kind of like a shock at the same time, I don't think you need to put that much into it.
I think they put too much of that in this movie, maybe. You know, I mean, the Evil Dead movie is pretty much a cartoon all the way through, and this movie, like, he puts those elements of cartoon in it. He sort of interjects them at moments in between what is essentially kind of a like horror drama about where you kind of are following this poor girl just trying to figure things out and try to like... find a way around this. I don't know. I really felt for her. I really, really felt bad. But then
So now you're a bleeding heart, huh?
I absolutely am, because she was really cute.
She was, totally.
Yeah.
Awesome woman.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm very actually happy that they they went ahead and went with her, except for Ellen Page, who's instead of Ellen Page, who's my I think right next to Grammar Girl. Mm-hmm. She's my other nemesis.
Oh, okay.
I really don't like her.
Well, I have no opinion one way or the other.
She's hot, but the way she talks, I don't know. She's like Neve Campbellish to me, and that bothers me.
Ooh,
Kristen Stewart,
yeah.
Neve Campbell, and Ellen Page. My
is the one of my favorites. Not your favorites. Anyway, yeah, she was good in this, and everybody was pretty good. Like the scene, I liked the scene with the parents, with where he's introducing her to her upper crest, you know, parents, yeah. And the mother is very clearly judging her and being a real bitch to her, which always seems kind of forced in movies. Like, are people really that awful to each other in real life? Like, are mothers of sons that are overbearing really that bad right out of the get-go? But then she turns it around. I like that turns around. For a minute there, it doesn't last, obviously. Right. But, I really had a lot of sympathy for her. And then, of course, at the end, you even see that she knows she can sort of give this, put this on somebody else. Even though that guy's a total prick, she decides not to.
You know, I like that guy. I don't think it's the same guy. He looked a lot like this guy that the Lonely Island guy is using everything. I don't remember if you even saw Hot Rod. Did you see it?
I saw Hot Rod, yeah.
The guy who is always doing the hand behind his head dancing, thrusting his hips.
I've only seen him once, but
he looked a lot like that guy to me. For some reason, every time I saw him, I wanted to just laugh because the guy looked so ridiculous.
Yeah, he did kind of...
He was so sneaky and creepy looking. Like, it was great. Like, I like really shifty, underhanded characters like that in movies.
Those are fun to have.
Yeah, non-redeemable.
And then, you know, so she tries to make her thing. But, I mean, obviously, you and I, we both figured out about 15 minutes before the end... The old switcheroo.
I don't think you weren't supposed to not.
I'm wondering about that. I mean, because they really make a point of like showing.
A point of her spilling her purse.
Yeah,
it has to mean
but
something.
Then you make a point of showing. Oh well, look, she's got the envelope. Yeah, right. It's got a circle, and then you'd have
easy.
To really have
it's
good
easy.
Memory to think
no,
back
no,
there because
no.
they only call back to it once. I
it's
think.
Easy.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
In any movie like this, you remember any sort of thing they do. Because one thing I noticed was. There was a lot of emphasis on individual little things in the first act. There's a focus on a button. There's focus on a quarter. There's focus on a fly.
The thing about her fixing his printer was always weird. I thought that would come back, and it didn't. Did
right.
it?
Yeah.
It was like she was like a little more, you know, had a little more ingenuity.
Yeah.
And,
something like that. I don't know. It didn't really end up helping her.
No, it didn't.
You know, one thing I thought was really funny was it was a running gag, but I think three times the woman ripped out chunks of her hair.
Yeah,
her hair looked totally normal.
Hair looked normal every time.
But it was obviously, you know, that was a joke, and I don't know if that played as well as it should have, but I thought that was
Well, I kept
funny.
Wondering if that was going to, like, if that had some sort of symbolic meaning, or
she just kept ripping her hair.
But it never changed the way she never didn't, like, have patches of missing hair at any, which didn't affect the way she looked at all, so it was kind of throwaway.
You know, I think showing a cruel streak she had kind of gained was the fact that, you know, everything would have been fine if she just helped this woman like she originally wanted to. But since this curse happened, she decides she's going to send that lady... She's going to send the dead lady to hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think it's funny that she, like, so willfully chose to send
this... She didn't that willfully. She had to think about who to do
it.
Oh,
but then she was pretty happy about it. She was pretty excited about it.
I think at that point, that was the most justifiable solution.
Oh, man.
I did make a joke that at one point, like, oh, they're driving up to Pelican Bay, you know? But
that would have been easy.
That would have been
easy out.
An easy out for sure.
What'd you do, murder a bunch of kids? Here, have a present for you.
Yeah, here's a present for you. The button on me shoes. But, no, I enjoyed it for what it was, and it kind of has that obligatory type of ending that you get with a lot of these movies. It seems to me, though, that you used to get a lot more horror movies, maybe it was just the kind of movies that I watched, where there was the, you know, clean ending, everything was kind of wrapped up in a bow. And maybe that's more now. I don't really, like I said, I'm not a real big fan of the genre, but what do you think? Do you think that mostly we're getting, like, you know, movies that just sort of, like, boom, and kind of nihilistic, you know? Like, it didn't really matter that you watched this because this is the way things turn out, you know? Shit still goes wrong.
No, I was 100% expecting it, and what I don't like, I prefer this to
an easy, all of a sudden,
I prefer this to the one where... You think it ends happily, and then there's like a hand that pops up out of the ground.
That's stupid.
You know, I always think that's. I don't know. You know, I like when they just end like that because a horror movie, it's almost like disingenuous that it would end happily.
It can be, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a lesson kind of thing.
I can't really think of any that do. I mean, for the most part. I mean, not that end like happily.
But I don't know. I mean, I think part of the weird part is they opened it up for a sequel in a strange way because what's-his-name ends up sort of witnessing the end of the film and seeing the emergence of the supernatural beings and whatnot. And whenever you do that big reveal with the supernatural beings being witnessed by somebody that was the formerly the non-believer, it kind of opens you up to a whole new,
right.
Like, well, what's going to happen next?
Now, I was thinking of...
But I don't see this movie actually having a sequel. It just doesn't make sense.
I mean, you could do it again, like, you know, you could have some different demons and stuff. It's always...
I suppose you can.
Yeah, I don't know. I overall enjoyed it. I think the execution was pretty good because the idea is really kind of...
Straightforward.
Very straightforward, yeah.
And kind of old-timey, too.
Yeah, super old-timey, yeah.
Just a curse.
And, of course, he did the thing with the 80s Universal...
Yeah.
Tag in the beginning, and then afterwards the old one saying, like, super old style visit Universal Studios and stuff like that. You know who Sam Raimi looks like? Judd Apatow. You ever notice that? They look similar.
Well, Apatow's got the big beard, right?
Yeah, Raimi grows
in their eyes and stuff, maybe?
Maybe their faces look similar.
Okay, maybe they're the same person.
Sometimes Raimi will grow a beard and they look similar. Yeah.
So I would give it a 3.5 out of 5.
I'm gonna go with 3.5.
And that's mostly probably just because she's really, really cute.
Oh, man, you gotta stop doing that.
I gotta stop doing that. There were no Zeppelins though.
There was a train. Yeah. There was was there any sort of annex or lobby that you liked?
I actually liked that part of the train station.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And
yeah, I don't know what city this was supposed to be in. It was obviously
it was outside of Pasadena because they ended up going to Pasadena. So it was L.A. They mentioned something about L.A. a few times.
I like how the house they have, like the window
that he inexplicably doesn't live with her at the end.
Yeah, that kind of
like
weird.
He leaves her and he's like, "I'll see you tomorrow."
Right. I'm gonna go sleep in a home shelter.
Yeah, I'm gonna go sleep in a different house, even though we live together.
But anyway, I like that. The one reason why you can't always tell things are L.A. unless they explicitly tell you is because there's always going to be windows that look out over the Civic Center. Like, wow, this is a city with a lot of stuff. And literally, the only part of L.A. with any skyscrapers at all is the Civic Center, which is just this one little circle
space
in L.A.
It's really not a city if you think about it.
I mean, it's a huge sprawling metropolis you know, the cultural center of the Western United States or whatever, but you got just one chunk of, you know, even Seattle was like, you know, there's skyscrapers everywhere. I've seen the thing from Fraser, you know, that's
exactly.
And San Diego, you know, I mean, like it's 2 miles, 2.5 hours down the road and it's got skyscrapers all over the place. But LA is just no space for it because it started out as a, you know, Mexican plantation community and it just kind of grew out.
Oranges.
Yeah.
Orange fields everywhere the eye can see.
Right.
Anyway,
yeah, I enjoyed it.
What do you give it?
3.5.
Well, that's the Feudal Podcast review of Drag Me to Hell. Obviously, if you want to check us out, you can go to graniteseed.com and check for the Feudal Podcast. You can download us from iTunes. You can email us at futilepodcast@gmail.com. Sam Raimi.